Associate Director Rachel Gilmer and Program Director Luke Harris of the African Policy Forum, New York, and Brandon Lewis and Logan Cotton, young black educators in Houston, from Chicago and Atlanta, in dialogue for this morning panel, Black Life Matters. And good morning to all of you, and thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
And we thank you all for being with us on this Wednesday morning, the 17th of December. Let's just make sure that we're in the right month, December 2014, the morning show on WBAI.
Well, indeed, Michael, it does seem to get blurred together. I've actually been to more die-ins in the past 2 weeks. But that's an interesting point, as I say that, to move from the enormous expression of interest and folks coming out for die-ins. Indeed, this morning in the criminal court in Brooklyn, legal aid lawyers are going to do a 7-minute die-in, the 7 minutes really took the life of Eric Garner, who was actually a client of the Legal Aid Society. So I want to begin with Rachel and really all of you engage in conversation with each other. You are the new leadership. Where do we take this movement? How do we continue the process of organizing and, of course, implementing change? Rachel, your thoughts.
Well, what I think is so amazing about the way young people's vision of racial justice has grown from maybe where the movement, or you know, the civil rights or the civil rights conversation was a couple of years ago, is that they're really thinking about how do we bring systems together. That this is about police brutality and it is about state-sanctioned violence, but that state-sanctioned violence takes many, many forms. Now we need to be thinking about multiple systems, and that this is really about racism. And they're not afraid to say that, and that's at the forefront of the conversation. I also think there's been a fundamental rejection of sort of anti-respectability politics, or fundamental rejection of respectability politics, that has allowed them to really be visionary in terms of calling folks out and really demanding change in a way that is so refreshing. And I think to see the young people do that, it just inspired the whole nation and the whole world really to follow. And so I think as sort of the political pressure continues to mount, I mean, the movement's really young. It's only been, what, 130 days about? So I think people are so quick to be like, what the answer is? Where do we go from here? But, you know, the Montgomery bus boycott was 400 days. So this movement's really young. We might not have all the answers now, but we know that we're fundamentally rejecting the system. And I think that it will become more and more clear as time goes what the alternative is. But I think that fundamental rejection is the most important place to start, and that everything else will go from there.
Luke Harris?
I would, of course, agree with everything that Rachel has just said, and suggest that we really need to hold the criminal justice system, the juvenile justice system, and all the many sectors of American society that are still plagued with problems of institutional and structural racism accountable. One of the things that is so potent about the new leadership that has been generated and that is now in place, that is connected to these marches and these demonstrations, is a vision of racial justice that reflects a shared fate amongst communities of color, for men and women. It's a wholly inclusive vision of racial justice that links back to the best of the traditions of activism that grows out of communities of color, which has always been multiracial, multicultural, going back to abolitionist democracy, moving through the era of apartheid to the post-civil rights era.
Brandon and Logan.
So I agree with what Rachel said, and I also think that what implicit in this movement is a fundamental rejection of the framework that was left to us by the leaders of the civil rights movement. So we are fundamentally rejecting the need for a black male messiah to come and lead this movement. We are fundamentally rejecting that this movement cannot be led by queer people and by women. And so we are creating a new framework for what movement and leadership can look like. And I think if we stay committed to that, then our vision for racial justice will be much more inclusive of all black lives, and not just the lives of black men.
Brandon and Logan, both of you, would like to hear from both of you in this. How does, have you made any contact, or what are your contacts with the older generation, the folks from the civil rights era, and in what they did? Has there been any discussion among?
So that's been an interesting experience for us as we've been organizing in different places. When we were in Ferguson, the march that we were a part of actually ended up going into a park where we were met by members of the Nation of Islam, and Al Sharpton was slated to attend, along with Mr. Farrakhan. And that was really, I think, like an early instance of contact for us that has been a big moment of reflection ever since, because even optically, what ended up happening at that park was we had a bunch of, you know, black men on stage speaking on behalf of everyone. And the young people who had been, you know, sleeping by the Mike Brown Memorial and who had been really keeping the pressure on the police and on the country to even pursue the indictment charge against Darren Wilson were really relegated to the margins. Mm. So, you know, our interactions, I think, have been varied with people who have a salary to be organizing and who have been doing it forever and for whom they get to say, you know, respect your elders. I think that some of the experiences have been really, really frustrating and have felt kind of suffocating. But that's not to say that we haven't had a lot of really wonderful mentors and guides who say that it's up to us to be active and to keep the pressure on the country.
And Rachel, I'm going to just take the opportunity, since we started with this, the issues of gender, both coming in as leadership and the invisibility of the violence that has been committed by policing apparatus against women, against young black girls, and against people who are queer, LGBT people. I wonder if you can address that. And please, the four of you, you're taking us to the new leadership forum. Engage each other.
Yeah, I think I shared with you that at the Millions March in New York City, we carried a banner that had photos of black women who have been killed by the police. And people had a variety of responses. Some people, I think, were very grateful. And a lot of younger voices were really grateful. I think the younger generation might not have an anti-patriarchal vocabulary necessarily, but I think both fundamentally understand that the movement should be inclusive. Many people were also shocked, just had no idea that black women were both killed by the police, because their names are not at the forefront of rallies. They're not at the forefront of the media. And then there were some people who were just sort of fundamentally didn't have a frame to understand it, so they just wanted to look away. They didn't want to deal with it at all. So some of the work that we've been doing is really thinking about how do we bring women to the forefront to really understand that racial terror operates in a lot of gendered ways in this country, that if we're thinking about comprehensive solutions needs to be incorporated into our thinking and our understanding of how racism operates. I don't know if folks saw the video of John Crawford's girlfriend getting interrogated by the police after he was killed, but they accused her of being on drugs. They threatened her with jail. And while that's a different form of racial terror than getting killed, although women get killed too, women also face all of this same aggression and don't also have that protect and serve thing, you know, relationship with the police that we're supposed to as citizens in this country. I think bringing up the D.C. rally is also important. I don't know if people are aware, but Al Sharpton led, organized this protest in D.C. and didn't bill the Ferguson organizers to speak, and so they literally had to bum rush the stage. And I think that is not only a rejection of young leadership, but that's also a rejection of young female leadership, because a lot of the organizers in Ferguson are young women, And afterwards, one of Al Sharpton's children went on Twitter and said the movement didn't start in Ferguson. So again, that's a specific rejection of the fact that Black women are at the forefront of this movement. Black Lives Matter was started by three queer Black women, and so I think people are fine with the organizing happening, but then they want to take credit for it, which is really, really, really problematic. And I think that is primarily coming from the civil rights generation.
Yes, and I just wanted to say, although I really want to send things back to the folk in Texas as soon as possible, because I'm really very interested in what they're saying. In light of what one of the listening sessions, town hall meetings that have taken place in Los Angeles, in Chicago, in Atlanta, most recently, two in New York City, where we've lifted up the voices of women and girls of color with a view towards understanding that racial oppression and our vision of racial justice should really have women and girls of color at the center, along with men and boys. And in these sessions, we give voice to all members of these communities, not just heterosexual men, but trans women and people from across our community, because that's what this movement is all about, and that's what young people like the folk in Texas, it's my understanding, are at the center of doing nowadays.
And there was a really powerful indictment that came out yesterday in the Huffington Post. Journal Moore wrote this piece called, it's an open letter to mainstream LGBT organizations that have been silent around Black Lives Matter. And it really is an indictment of large LGBT organizations that have really not taken up the banner or the work of talking about Black Lives Matter, but work in Black communities, but don't want to talk about this, who don't want to talk about the fact that Black trans women are killed all the time, that Black queer folk are killed all the time. And so those organizations need to be called out, and they need to join this work if the movement's going to continue to grow.
Yeah, and I think a lot about some of the conversations that we've had with people like Professor Brittany Cooper out of Rutgers, Professor Crunk, and she talks, I think, really, she puts a lot of emphasis on the fact that there needs to be work happening within activist circles and within the Black community that makes a concerted effort to watch out for the well-being and the health and the safety of women and queer people and trans people. As a straight Black male, it's that has been some level of internal work that has had to happen. And I think it's made the movement better for it. The best thing I think that, that Rachel started bringing up at first is that this current iteration of activism, of youthful protest, I think that it, in a way, is a project of reclaiming Black imagination of what the future can be. And I think that's what's been really powerful, is that we don't feel beholden to what we've seen in history books. That we're actually really pushing for a new vision of what the future should be. And I hope that it will be inclusive, as people have emphasized it should be.
Right, and I would just like to add that, there's the way in which the mainstream media doesn't cover Black Lives Matter. It's also reflected in the ways in which a lot of the richest, most multicultural, most inclusive activisms that have grown out of communities of color in this country, we don't know about. And we don't know about it because there's been a pushback against multicultural, multiracial curriculums in this country. So you can't learn about these things in elementary and secondary schools as a general rule in the United States. These things are marginalized in colleges and universities, graduate and professional schools. But there's a rich tradition that can help us build on the movement that's in place now. And part of it is connected to things like the work of the critical race theorists over the last half century, moving from people like Kimberly Crenshaw to Devin Carbato to Cheryl Harris to Ian Lanny Hanny Lopez, a whole array of men and women who think in ways that are reflected in the work of new young people, but whose ideas are really introduced to Americans in general and people of color in particular.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think, like, I'm glad that you brought up the scholarly underpinnings of it, because I've been really intrigued and surprised as to just the extent to which academia and, like, intellectualism has entered the conversation, and that you know, I know that at least my experience, I think Brandon as well, and I hope this is what you guys have had, that you know, you can go to a rally or a protest or a town hall, and people are talking about Audre Lorde, and they're serious about it, right? And they're talking about bell mm-hmm. hooks, and there's mm-hmm. a real desire to take this immense body of, you know, black thought and black critique and to mm-hmm. put it into action. And mm-hmm. I think that that's been a really unexpectedly powerful component of what's happened, that, you know, managed to link up what's happening in the streets with mm-hmm. with the ivory tower, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean you're absolutely right, and there are traditions, like traditions in the African American community, like abolitionist democracy, which were multicultural and which women played a significant role in, going back to the era of slavery, and it's those traditions that can help to fuel, you know, the beautiful conception and practice of civil rights that's in place now in the work of folk like you two, young people, and the folks that we're seeing engaged in these marches across the country.
And Rachel, I want you to also shout out the names of the sisters who have been the victims of police violence. And we never have enough time, but like to think that this becomes a regular, where we on Wednesday morning bring folks like yourselves together and cross-fertilize and inform and educate, and I hope build links and make WBAI a kind of hub of organizing for all the rich things that you all are doing. So I want you to shout out those names, Rachel, and then I want to give each one of you an opportunity to tell us about where you're going with your concerns from here. Rachel?
Eleanor Bumpers, Kendra James, Diana Stanley Jones, Pearlie Golden, Lakia Boyd, Chantel Davis, Yvette Smith, Taisha Miller, Tarika Wilson, Cherise Francis, Miriam Carey, so many names that are never said. And I think what's crazy about this list is you have a 7-year-old on it and you have someone in their 90s on it. So black women are killed throughout the lifespan, and no one blinks. And so how do we put these names forth and say them and remember their faces and ensure that we understand that this is a movement for all of our lives?
And each one of you, if you can take 1 minute so that we can get a sense of where we go from here.
Well, I would just say that the policy forum, one of the things that we're going to be doing is continuing these town hall meetings across the country. So we're going to be moving into meetings in the new year in Philadelphia and in other places throughout the country, including New Orleans and Baltimore and Washington D.C. And the whole idea is to speak to the needs of people of color across the community, and to think in terms of a vision of leadership that hands leadership down from where it's been into the hands of a new generation that's going to take this forward.
Brandon Logan.
Logan, you can go first.
So I'm just thinking about a quote from Darnell Moore of the Feminist Wire, and he always says, "We cannot do to each other what the system does to us." So I think that moving forward, whatever we do has to be inclusive, that it has to be democratic, that it has to make sure that it enfranchises all sectors of society, that, you know, people can be the multiplicity of their identities and not have to partition some portion of themselves in order to be considered worthy of the movement. I really, as far as I can think of, I don't know where is the there that we're trying to reach exactly. I haven't seen it yet, but I just think that it's going to have to be a lot of young people in a lot of different places causing a lot of noise and being very clear about what they want. And I hope that, you know, I'm really thankful for this opportunity because I'm hoping that we have some new partners over in New York and D.C. who we keep building with.
Yeah.
Okay, 30 seconds each for, I'm sorry, but...
no problem.
You'll both be back, all four of you, for sure. Go ahead.
So one thing that I would like to remind folks of, and I have to remind myself of constantly, is that this movement is anti-white supremacy. It is not anti-white. And I think a lot of people have gotten confused about that. So I think, like, moving forward from here, I'm going to be very strategic and very purposeful about speaking to white people who are uncomfortable talking about Black Lives Matter or talking about police brutality, because, like, they are also important in this movement, and they should also be included. This work can't just be on the backs of Black folks. So being strategic about having conversations with white people about what we're doing.
Rachel Gilmer, take us out.
Yeah, I just look forward to continuing to be on the streets and make people feel uncomfortable, to interrupt people's everyday lives. I think that's been the sort of amazing thing of this moment, is that people are, you know, will stop traffic and people say, I got to get somewhere. This is an inconvenience. Well, the loss of Black children is more than an inconvenience.
Absolutely.
So how do we make people continue to feel that discomfort until they get, they're forced onto our side?
Rachel Gilmer, Luke Harris from the African Policy Forum in New York, and Brandon Lewis and Logan Cotton, who are young African-American educators now in Houston, from Chicago and Atlanta. You give lots of hope and lots of energy to the burgeoning new efforts that are coming forward to really root out this historic malignancy of racism and systemic racism within our society. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us. And I really would encourage people to go to the websites, the African Policy Forum, and we'll continue to stay in touch with Brandon Lewis and Logan Cotton to find out what's happening down in Texas.
Thank you.